Well, what's your favourite mushroom dish? Mine used to be mushroom crepes, but right now I'm into the small button ones, pan-fried with mushroom salt, bit of pepper, on toast. Delicious. Magic mushrooms. That probably makes you think of some type of, I don't know, drug that makes you go off and think of wonderful things, puts you into beautiful dreams. But mushrooms, ordinary mushrooms, may just have a real magic that we have yet to understand. It's true on pappardelle, they're fantastic, and on a steak, etc., etc., but I'm talking way, way beyond that, into things that can really help mankind across the globe. So an article under the BBC Future banner, The Unexpected Magic of Mushrooms, took my eye. It was written by one of their senior journalists, Richard Gray. Richard Gray, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thank you very much, Amanda. Lovely to be here.
Now, what's this story about a monster lying beneath someone's feet that's been there since Xerxes waged war against the ancient Greeks?
So this is a fungus which is growing underneath a patch of forest in Michigan, in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. A scientist called Jim Anderson visited it about 30 years ago while doing some other research and took some samples, and he and his colleagues discovered that this fungus, they thought it was lots of different little funguses that they were sampling, and once they got back to the laboratory, they discovered that they were actually the same organism, one single specimen of fungus. And they've subsequently then gone back. At the time, this was during the 1980s, at the time it made lots of headlines around the world. They estimated it covered an area of about 91 acres and weighed around 100 tons. And at the time it made headlines for being the biggest and oldest organism living on Earth. They subsequently have gone back over the last few years and taken more samples over a wider area and used more up-to-date genetic analysis and found that it's actually even bigger and older than they even estimated the first time. So they think it's probably four times larger and about 1,000 years older than that original estimate, so about 2,500 years old.
That's unbelievable, isn't it?
It's incredible. It's absolutely amazing.
It really gives meaning to the word unbelievable. Perhaps we should say incomprehensible. I'm not quite sure how to really describe it, but apparently the details of this came out on April Fool's Day and people thought they were joking, but no, that's not the case. Now, what can we get, do we think, from these sorts of fungi?
Well, this particular fungi, what they found when they looked at its DNA was that it appeared to be growing in quite an unusual way. So over time, as we grow or as we age, as something grows, our cells divide. And as that happens, our DNA can become damaged just through natural error processes. As you copy something, so when our cells divide, the DNA becomes copied and errors creep into that over the process. So over 1,000 years, over 2,500 years, in fact, you would expect there to be a lot of errors in there. They actually found that there were very few errors in the DNA of this particular fungi. It's called Amarilla gallicea. That's its Latin name. It's actually got a much better nickname. It's called the humongous fungus, which I think is probably a bit catchier.
A lot easier, yes.
It's a lot easier, yes. And it's a type of honey fungus. So what they found, though, was that this particular pattern of errors was so low, they think it seems to have a mechanism that actually checks for and repairs the DNA as the organism grows. And that's the opposite to what happens in cancer cells. Cancer cells are very prone to errors. They grow at an uncontrolled rate, and these errors, you know, almost kind of run away with themselves, and we get a lot of DNA damage in cancer cells. So they think that perhaps it might be possible to use this fungus as a kind of counterpoint, something that they could study to try and understand some of the things that go wrong in cancer. And who knows, perhaps even, you know, find some new ways of treating cancer in the future.
Just to put that in context, since we're talking about, I think this is called like a low mutation rate. It won't mutate. It's got a capacity to stop that happening in itself.
That's correct, yeah.
Apparently they took some samples, about 15, from different parts of the forest, and that was all sequenced up. And out of 100 million letters in the genetic code, 100 million letters, just 163 had changed. And apparently that is much, much lower than anyone normally would imagine. So that's fantastic, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's an incredible thing to find. And I think they don't really understand how it's doing it. That's obviously one of the pieces of research that needs to be done now, is really to understand exactly how an organism like this can grow to such a large size and be so old with such a large genetic code and have such a low mutation rate. It's quite incredible.
Mm. And apparently there are lots of different types of fungi in the world. I mean, I tend to think of the sort of mushrooms that you eat. That's what we all come in contact with. It's a part of the family. But when I read there are 3.8 million, I'm a bit shocked. I mean, that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Well, I think because a lot of the time we don't see the fungi that are all around us. Most of the time they're growing quite happily under the ground. We have no idea that they're there. The only time that we actually see fungi is when what's known as their fruiting bodies pop up out of the ground. And those are the toadstools that we recognize. There's obviously lots of other types of fungi as well. Things like molds and yeasts and all these things are also classed under the fungi family. I mean, one of the extraordinary facts I stumbled across when I was researching this article was that, in fact, the combined biomass, if you were to take all the fungi in the world and clump it all together into one giant pot, if you combine that all together, it actually weighs more than all the animals on the planet. So if we were to take, you know, all the blue whales, all the humans, all the insects, all of those together weigh less than the combined weight of all the fungi on our planet. And it's by quite a considerable portion as well.
Gee, that puts it in perspective, doesn't it? Well, perhaps there's a reason. I think it's the Bible that says, unless you see, you don't believe. Well, we don't see, and that's why we find that sort of statistic somewhat incredible. Now, look, apparently the Royal Botanic Gardens in Kew have recently published a report to enlighten those of us who haven't thought much about mushrooms and fungi in the past about the sorts of things we're getting from them now. Can you tell me about the most interesting of those?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think some of us will certainly be aware of some of the things that we get from fungi, things like drugs, for example.
Vaccines, they're handy, aren't they?
Vaccines, of course, yes. About 15% of all our vaccines are produced from fungi. Penicillin is a well-known antibiotic that was found from a mold that grows on old bread. And quite a number of the antibiotics we now use are produced by fungi.
Sorry to interrupt you, but by an academic in my state, incidentally, but still, that's beside the point.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Fantastic. You know, the discovery of antibiotics has changed medicine as we know it. And they're also sources for things like drugs for migraines and statins, which are used for treating heart disease. I think there's a number of new drugs that are used as immunosuppressants. So these are drugs which dampen down the immune system and often given to patients who are, you know, have had some kind of organ transplant, for example. I think there's a new one recently that came out which was used for treating multiple sclerosis. And this one came from a very interesting fungus that infects the larvae of cicada, which are these insects that often kind of appear from out under the ground in huge numbers at a certain time of year. And usually they're dormant underground in the larvae stage for many years, and then all at once they suddenly appear out of the ground. But this fungi will take them over and almost turns them into a kind of zombie, and it sprouts out of the back of the larvae. Unfortunately, the larvae dies as a result, but for a long time they remain alive while being infected with this fungi. And part of that process, it produces a chemical which suppresses the immunosystem of the cicada, and that's been used in humans now to treat multiple sclerosis.
That's a good thing. I'm talking with Richard Gray, senior journalist at BBC Future, about the fabulous story of mushrooms. You know, there really is magic there for all of us. You know, one of the depressing things when you think you've got some terrible bug and you go to a good doctor, like I believe mine is, who says, well, you're not having an antibiotic because this is probably a virus. You know, go home and rest for a few days. And if you've still got it in 10 days, come back. Or if you get, you know, seriously ill in the meantime, because antibiotics don't work against viruses. But there's a Finnish researcher who believes that mushrooms might in fact have some key compound that will help us fight viral diseases.
Yeah, so this is Riikka Linnanowski, who is at the Natural Resources Institute in Finland, and she's been doing some work looking at the possibility of getting compounds from fungi that destroy viruses. And it's interesting, she's found quite a number of candidates for the work against viruses that cause diseases like flu, polio, mumps, measles, glandular fever. And also, she was telling me that she's also aware of compounds from fungi that will target things like HIV and the Zika virus. Obviously, she's not doing all this work herself. This is work that she's been compiling together. But she specifically and her team are looking at fungi that grow in the mangrove forests of Colombia. These environments are very salty. They're quite difficult for microbes and many organisms to live in. You have to be very specialized kind of plant and a specialized kind of fungi to live in these environments because of the high salt content and the fact that they change regularly as well. And she thinks that this sort of extreme environment will actually be an even richer source of antiviral drugs because of the extreme nature of the mangrove forest, driving evolution in these fungi that live there and causing them to produce powerful antiviral drugs. So she's out there looking for new antiviral agents. So perhaps, who knows, in the future, we might have drugs against the Zika virus and HIV that come from the mangrove forest.
Well, that'd be great. But there's even better news, isn't there? And anything to do with our health, obviously, we consider to be better. I'm not entirely sure about that. I don't know why we want people to live longer and longer and longer. I think we should want them to live better lives, but not necessarily longer ones. But anyway, look, that's another point. One of the other big problems we face, apart from our declining health here and there as we get older, is plastics. And who would have thought that a fungus found growing in soil at a landfill site on the outskirts of Islamabad might provide a solution? I mean, what did you think when you first read that there's a fungus that can eat plastic?
I was blown away. I mean, I think we consider the problem with plastics to be such a difficult one because they're so persistent. They hang around for such a long time and they don't really break down properly. You know, they break into smaller and smaller pieces and we end up with these microplastics, which are then very difficult to get rid of. They find their way into all sorts of environments. I mean, you know, you can find them in sand in the beach. You know, I forget what the exact figures are, but a large proportion of the sand on our beaches is made up of microplastics. And in fact, a proportion of the salt that we eat is also contains these microplastics. So they're very persistent and they get everywhere. So to find something that can actually tackle this problem and break down the chemical bonds that keep these plastics, makes them so persistent and so difficult to get rid of, is quite extraordinary. So yeah, I mean, if they're able to use this fungi to perhaps put it into landfill sites elsewhere around the world, or even to actually create specialist kind of facilities where this fungi can basically eat through our plastic waste, would be absolutely wonderful.
Yes, plastic feeding stations for the fungi sounds good to me. I mean, it might not be all plastic. I understand she says it's things like furniture foams and electronics cases and adhesives and films. There might be some resistant plastics, but the point is, apparently this fungi will start to break this down within a matter of weeks, where it might stay in the soil and water for years. And there's another fungi, apparently, on ordinary old rotting ivy leaves. Rotting ivy leaves that's got a prodigious appetite for plastic, apparently. I mean, that is such good news.
It's fantastic. And I mean, it's not just plastics that these fungi can help us clear up. I mean, there's been species that have been found that consume oil. So oil pollution, they can help degrade heavy metals that get into the environment, and also pesticides, which can cause all sorts of problems. There's even been some fungi that can tackle radioactive material. So it's been proposed that perhaps these could be used to help kind of clear up former nuclear sites and areas that have become contaminated with radioactive material.
Mm. Now, we started off talking about this monster fungus thing that's been alive for so long and weighs, you know, hundreds and hundreds of tons, that spreads out. The photograph that I saw has it spreading a bit like veins and arteries. That's what it looked like to me, white veins and arteries spreading around within the soil. And apparently there are people now who are saying, look, if it's got those vein-like webs, perhaps we can do something with those threads. And now they're realising that it might be nature's glue. What's the story there? Coming full circle around to packaging.
Yeah, so these vein-like threads that you're talking about are known as mycelium. So most fungi, particularly fungi that grow in soil, will have these mycelium. And these are really the parts of the fungi that spread out through the soil. They kind of creep into all the nooks and crannies and they get onto roots and all sorts of things like that. And while they're doing that, they bond that material together. So they're very responsible for kind of holding the soil together. And in the same way, researchers have found that it may be possible to use this sort of natural bonding ability of mycelium of different types of fungi to produce packaging material that is more environmentally friendly. So they're looking at an alternative, say, to something like polystyrene. If they can take, you know, waste wood chips or bits of rice husks, the stuff that normally gets thrown away during food production or perhaps production of furniture or timber, and give this stuff to the mycelium to grow on. Over a few days, really, that mycelium will grow around that material, consume it. They'll produce enzymes that start to digest that waste, and that then starts to bond together into this kind of gunky mass. And the researchers then have found that if they stop it at the right time, they actually then get this lightweight, quite robust material that's very similar to polystyrene and can be used for packaging. And I think companies like Dell have already started to use some of this to package their computers in.
Well, the list is never ending. I mean, honestly, Richard, you and I could be talking for a very, very long time about this. Even an Italian researcher using fungi to develop skin replacements, that's another tremendous opportunity. Building materials are now being built. Mushroom leather, Stella McCartney's onto this, using it. I mean, there seems to be no end to what can be done here. And I have to say thank you very, very much for joining us. And I look forward to one day living in a house made with smart concrete. These mushrooms of some sort. Richard Gray, thanks very much for joining us.
No problem at all. My pleasure.